cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
So we talked earlier with our Cynthia Kuhns about how we need to be ready to deal with more COVID variants coming. Gene sequencing is what we got into. Our Bloomberg Intelligence Farmer team has come out with some new research noting that the Delta variant may warrant a new COVID vaccine to combat the higher infectivity and potentially worse disease outcomes of the variant. So let's get to it, because when I read in this morning and when I look at the Bloomberg right now, the most read stories in the past 8 hours, 7 out of 20 have to do with the Delta variant and COVID. 6 of them are related to this Bloomberg Intelligence research. Let's get to it with Bloomberg News. Is Drew Armstrong. He's a senior editor for U.S. Healthcare, and he joins us in our Interactive Broker studio. I can't read my own writing. That's really bad. It's been that kind of a day. This research is pretty phenomenal. Reading in, Drew, I'm not surprised, because we're all kind of nervous and trying to understand the Delta variant. Tell us a little bit about what we need to understand about it right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, a couple of kind of just fundamental points. We know that these viruses evolve over time, and some of these ways that they evolve can be, you know, not particularly consequential for
normal
us.
Normal flu virus,
yeah,
right?
Everything, these viruses are mutating every single time they replicate in your body. They are a highly, 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 you know, they mutate very fast, happens all the time. Very few of these mutations actually matter. A lot of them make the virus so it doesn't even function properly. And, you know, it just, you know, this is random chance. You're basically spinning the roulette wheel every time from a genetic standpoint. But some of them do matter. And we have these things that are called variants of concern. The Delta variant is kind of the you know, one of the latest and greatest of these. And if you're a, you know, virologist or an epidemiologist, one of the things you're talking about is this concept of vaccine escape. Does something about the virus change in a way that it makes it so that the immune response that's kind of sitting there in your body ready and waiting is no longer, you know, effective, or is no longer as effective? And keep in mind, all this stuff is kind of on a spectrum, you know, against, you know, a certain type of mutation of the virus. And then does that allow the virus to, you know, that version, that mutation and strain of the virus, to kind of spread and be more fit and capable in a population? And so that's really what you're worried about. Now, you know, the good news when we talk about that is that, you know, just as viruses can evolve, so can vaccines. I mean, we come up with new flu vaccines every single year.
Right.
You know, there's already been talk about, will we need some kind of, you know, variant booster for this particular coronavirus? And so I think that's a discussion that's underway right now, and looking, you know, how good is the protection, and do we need to tweak things in some way or another to attack this particular variant, or what is the virus going to look like in the future?
Can a variant in a virus, you talk about a spectrum. So can someone who's gotten a vaccine, though, I mean, it can affect all of us differently, right? Even as a mutation, or is it, can we say this is the mutation, this is how it's going to affect you?
That's exactly right. I mean, I think the way to think about it is that this is not a binary question where a vaccine either, you know, works or it doesn't work. It's more of a question of, well, okay, this vaccine, let's say, was 95% protective, you know, against symptomatic illness or you know, anything worse than mild illness in the original strain. Well, the strain evolves and now that vaccine is, you know, 80% protective.
Still good.
Which is still good, but you know, it may be less protective. Or it may be that, for example, hey, you have a larger number of people who, you know, they get infected, but their infections are very mild. I just had a friend in Los Angeles. He had both doses of Pfizer back in April. He got COVID. He doesn't know what variant it was. But, you know, I mean, listen, he was sick and it wasn't fun, but you know, he was over it in a week or something like
that.
Was
it in the hospital?
No, was not in the hospital. And so I think, you know, and who knows if this is the variant or, you know, some original strain, but I think, you know, we really do have to think about this as a spectrum of protection where it's never going to disappear entirely. It's never going to be perfect. And where are you on that range, you know, both against protecting against infection entirely, protecting against more severe diseases, and so on and so forth.
How quickly are they tracking all the data about the variant to understand whether or not the vaccines are going to kind of stand up against it as it continues to mutate? Like, will they know instantaneously because they're tracking populations, or will there be a lag? Or
no, this stuff takes a while. And that's one of the real challenges here is that viruses mutate faster than vaccines evolve. And so one of the reasons that I think the flu vaccine tends to be relatively, you know, I mean, it works, but you know, it's obviously people still get the flu.
It's
it tends to be about,
proof,
you know,
60%
protective is something you're looking for generally with the flu. That's kind of what you can expect there. Part of the reason is that, you know, when you're making vaccine and you're making vaccine at a mass scale, you know, as we saw with the COVID vaccines, you're doing this months and months in advance. And so with flu vaccines, for example, you're trying to predict, hey, what strains of the flu are going to be circulating most predominantly by the time, you know, they have to guess a year or so out and say, okay, we think it's going to be these four strains. And sometimes they guess really well and the flu vaccine is great. Sometimes they don't guess so well and it's only moderately protective. The same dynamic may eventually come into play with this.
But we don't want that miss on COVID, right?
Right, exactly. And so, you know, I mean, listen, the flu and COVID are very different viruses. It's worth keeping in mind, you know, this is, you know, a virus that it may be that we, you know, that one, you know, that a vaccine, these mRNA vaccines, they might be very effective. It might be that, you know, if you end up doing a booster shot or something like that, you end up with very long lasting protection, you know, against almost all strains of this. I think this is a question that is one, it's being looked at, but it's still an open one exactly on whether we truly will need a new type of vaccine or a slightly modified vaccine, if we'll need a booster, or if we'll just be, you know, say, hey, we've got 80% against all the strains out there with the mRNA vaccines. That's pretty good. We don't know if we can get any better by giving more shots or modifying the shots.
So we don't know yet about a booster. Like, I keep thinking, do I have to circle some date on a calendar?
No, I think we really don't know. I know, you know, Pfizer has been talking it up. The U.S. government has been talking it down. I think the reality is that, you know, the question is still out there from a data standpoint in terms of, you know, how much does immunity wane? The immunity has a lot of different parts to it. You know, is it just these antibodies, which are kind of the like live active defenses that are circulating versus kind of the immune memory cells that are a little bit more dormant, but a little bit more permanent? You know, I think we really do not know yet exactly what long-term immunity for these vaccines looks like because, you know, they've not been out there for that long. They've only been in people's bodies for around a year. I mean, you know,
this is the one thing to the rush,
the
right?
So yeah, exactly. So we don't know. And I think that's very, very important. There's going to be a lot of data that is going to come out over the next couple of months. Some is going to go in one direction. Some is going to go in another. What I would encourage people to do is, you know, try to take the totality of this information as it comes out, because you're going to see headlines that point one direction and then ones that point the other. It's not that it's changing back and forth. This is the argument of science happening live in real time.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You have been covering all of this stuff in real time, and I know how exhausted you must be over the past year and a half. When we start to see, though, LA wear a mask, we have conversations here in the office like, throw on a mask, it doesn't hurt. How are we as the general public supposed to read that when you also say these vaccines are really effective and they do protect us?
I think the mask debate in this country is going to be really interesting to watch. I don't think anybody really wants to go back. You know, I mean, if you're, listen, as someone who's vaccinated, like, I hate wearing a mask. It sucks.
But
like,
do you wear it?
I do on planes, on the subway and things like that. I wear it where I have to wear it. And I wear it in a couple of situations, you know, when I'm around people I don't know or something like that.
Right.
You know, yes, but not very often. And like, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to have to go back to that. It is, you know, it is not
like
something
my
I, you know, it's not something I want to keep having to do. And so I think, and trust me, I'm very much on the like pro public health measure side of this. I follow this stuff and I wore my mask diligently. I think it's going to be very hard from a political standpoint and a public health messaging standpoint to reenact mass mandates again, because, you know, I it's hard to go back to that world for people, especially if they've been vaccinated, you know, and people are going to have a reset risk calibration, I would expect, a little bit, and figure out what their level of comfort is.
I feel like we keep hearing, Drew, increasingly from global leaders that in order to get through this, we have to have a global solution and there's got to be sharing of information, sharing of data. It isn't really happening, is it?
No, I mean, you know, I think one of the really challenging parts of the vaccine rollout within the context of the pandemic is that you've seen programs like COVAX, that's the WHO and Gavi organized program to kind of buy vaccines and distribute them, you know, equitably across the globe, but really, you know, trying to figure out a way of getting vaccines to lower income nations. It has just abysmally, you know, its start has been abysmal. I
mean, hasn't worked.
Has not worked, has gotten very few vaccines, has done, you know, has not been able to get them to lower income countries, particularly in Africa, where, you know, listen, people are complaining about a 50% vaccination rate in the United States. It's 1% in Africa, and they're having deaths spike in those places.
We need to be concerned about these hotspots. Like, I think there are people listening like, that's far away from me. But I also remember back in December, January of 2020, we're like, China, that's far away from me. It's never going to touch us. And here we are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, unvaccinated populations are pretty effective, you know, breeding grounds for new variants. And we've seen what happens when, a variant evolves that is successful in kind of leaping around a vaccine or is very effective at hitting, you know, unvaccinated or vulnerable populations. And so, yeah, I mean, just from like a purely selfish standpoint, it's a good thing. Like, we all get on airplanes and travel around the world and, you know, go to these places, or people come from these places, and, you know, virus doesn't really care about income or borders or anything like that.
We've got the Delta variant is much more contagious, right? That's certainly something we hear. I was talking with a doctor yesterday and they said, yeah, but it's not like your outcome is worse. Meaning if you've got the vaccine, you're likely to get through it. Are we likely to get to a stage, especially since a big part of the world is still not vaccinated? They are available hosts to continue the variations in COVID. Are we likely to get to a mutation that is not only more contagious, but more a killer?
It's hard to know. I mean, I think one of the general rules of viruses, you know, in a big picture sense, is that like a very effective a virus that kills its host very quickly is not a very good virus, because it makes it harder for, you know, it makes it harder for it to spread. I mean, Ebola is really, really scary. But as a virus, the reason it tends to say relatively self-contained is because it kills people too quickly before they can, you know, end up walking around and spreading it to lots and lots of people. It's very scary for healthcare workers. It's very scary if it's happening in your village, you know, but there's much less risk that, you know, someone gets Ebola and then has a, you know, you don't have a mild case of Ebola that you're walking, you know, walking around with, infecting lots and lots of other people. So, you know, yeah, I mean, this question of, you know, the global issue is a real one. And you know, the failure of richer nations to effectively contribute to COVAX and other ways, you know, and really help push vaccinations in other places. I mean, that is meaningful. And then you mentioned some of this data sharing stuff. I mean, I think another real issue that is going to come up over and over again, and is going to be, I hope, a point of consideration after this, you know, pandemic ends, is, you know, we do need probably a better system of surveillance and monitoring and fast action from a global standpoint, because I think you really saw and have seen over the course of this pandemic, you know, what happens when countries don't share information as rapidly as they might otherwise. You know, and now we're trying to track variants, and, you know, I mean, that is still a system that's kind of in its infancy in terms of, you know, growing up and having global, you know, genetic surveillance of these viruses.
When you wake up every morning and there's a ton of headlines when it comes to COVID and the vaccines and the variants, I mean, what is it that you're always looking for top of mind?
I think, you know, we're kind of at the point in this where it's, you know, I personally am really more thinking about the kind of the long outcome here. I think there's, you know, there's new fresh headlines every day, you know, really. But though, you know, the main thing I think we're keeping an eye on right now is, you know, where are people getting sick and why are they getting sick? You know, and be they vaccinated or unvaccinated, what do we really know, and what can we find out more to learn and add information about, you know, how effective these vaccines are, how the virus is evolving? I mean, those are the things that we're really paying attention to, because, you know, all that points to a time when, you know, what is the, you know, hopeful end point of this pandemic, you know, if there is one, or do we just end up kind of in a long tail endemic situation where we're dealing with this virus and living with it in some way or another for the rest of our lives?
Which is very possible.
Yes.
All right. Going to leave it there. Thank you so much. It's what I wanted to do today. So thank you so much.
Happy to.
I know you're a busy guy. Drew Armstrong. He's our senior editor for U.S. Healthcare right here at Bloomberg News. Check him out, his work on the Bloomberg Terminal, also at Bloomberg.com. Drew, thank you so much.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.